ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello, world. Hi, Degrassi alumni. You might recognize his voice. You wouldn't have last week, but this is Shane Kippel, yes, of the D-Grads podcast. I play Gavin Spinner Mason. That over there, that's another guy.
Mike Lobel at your service, a.k.a. Jay Hogarth. Shane, I'm really glad you're back in the driver's seat. Your voice is
thank you.
And you were good.
You were at my service last week. You were at everyone's service, really, because you just carried the team on your back. You didn't leave a man behind, even though I still died off halfway through. But you did your best.
I appreciate that. And look, man, I'm sorry. Like, I feel like the bad guy because I kind of put you up to it. I was like, let's just see how far we get. And yeah, your batteries ran out halfway through. Mm-hmm. They weren't Energizer, obviously.
No, they were Duracell. Stopped. They were Duracell.
Yeah.
But you convinced me, but I'm happy I did it because I didn't want you just hosting the podcast on your own. That feels like cheating. And also, we had a guest and
yes.
We already rescheduled once because I was sick. Didn't want to do it again. But
Dr. So Deanna Klimke.
She was great.
Alex Nunes, dude. She was amazing.
That was so cool getting to talk to her. Yeah. Yeah.
And we didn't know that she was a doctor. We had no idea she'd moved into psychology at all. Like, we lost complete contact with Deanna. So mm-hmm. This was a perfect full circle moment, I think, to have her back on the show. And she really can speak to the episodes in a different way.
Oh, yeah. She crushed it. And I was so sad that I had to bow out because I couldn't contribute. But I was so interested in where the conversation was going and all the facts that she was, bringing to the table and associating with what Paige was going through. And I just couldn't do it. I'll have to listen to the episode.
You better listen
on my own time.
You haven't even listened to her.
No.
We do this quick.
It's a black mark.
It's days after we released it right now. So
we'll get there. We'll get there. But we have another fun episode today, thankfully.
That's right. We're talking season 2, episode 9, Mirror in the Bathroom, which is, it's an episode that's about image, right? Not just how you look, but how you think that you look, especially how your peers see you. And also about how sometimes insecurity drives the need to become a different version of yourself.
Mm. And who's the song by?
The song, oh yeah, well, okay, so the episode title comes from Mirror in the Bathroom, which was a ska tune, a little ditty, by a band called The Beat or The English Beat, and it was released in 1980, and the track, very fitting, is about self-consciousness, getting sort of stuck in your own thoughts and worries about how you come across. Actually, the lead singer, the songwriter, Dave Wakeling, the idea came to him because he was looking at himself in the mirror one day while shaving, and he kind of started spiraling into the, he had this epiphany, okay, that self-involvement can turn into narcissism, and then narcissism becomes isolating and turns into isolation, which also feeds back into more self-involvement. So it's like this vicious loop of narcissism.
And they say that the more time someone spends with their own thoughts without just in their own head, it always tilts towards the negative. And that's why you end up spiraling into situational depression in many cases, because you're just focusing on all of your shortfalls and your inadequacies, and with no one there to write your course as you're thinking these things, you just And especially looking at yourself physically in a mirror of some sorts, you're sure. going to be assessing your body and all the things that you're insecure about there. So physically and psychologically, it's not a good thing to spend.
We need each other. Yeah, we need each other to keep our own self-destructive thoughts in check sometimes. We're herd animals. Beings. We're social creatures. So
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway, I like this episode. Let's get into it.
Yeah, and I thought we've been waiting for an episode where JT showed a second dimension, and hey, he very much did here. Yeah. Now, I also couldn't help but notice that the B plot was so distantly a B plot compared to the A. It seemed like there were maybe three or four scenes of consequence in the B plot.
Every time we cut back to the B plot, I had almost completely forgotten. I was like, oh,
right, this is
happening.
Still important, and it correlated very nicely with the A plot in a different way, obviously. But
can I say, Shane, this was all not just for JT, but Spinner also has a really nice depth of character here in this episode. And my lip quivered a little bit on your speech.
I
choked up there.
He was going to bat for Terry multiple times in this episode, which makes it more clear what fans have been talking about for so many years, why Spinner and Terry never got their shot.
Totally.
I see it now. I completely forgot about it.
I was like, whoa, this is a moment.
Mm-hmm. And I also thought it was a cool little fun fact for people that don't know. Christina Schmidt has been a model.
Christina is for
like 20 years now, 20 plus years.
Yeah. Very successful model. So life imitating art, imitating life.
There you go. That's a terrifying notion for me because some really messed up things happened to Spinner and I don't want those to become part of my life, even though some of them have. Anyway, let's get to the episode, shall we? Now, some facts about this here episode. The Canadian air date was November 17th, 2002. The U.S. air date was July 18th, 2002. It was written by James Hurst and Claire Ross Dunn with the story and Brendan York. First time
York.
I saw that name, Brendan York with the teleplay and director. The good old Paul Fox, who I miss dearly. Yeah, let's get into it.
Let's do.
So we open on Quan's class, where Liberty makes morning announcements. Toby helped Degrassi place third in the regional computer programming competition, but is overshadowed very quickly by Sean being named sports MVP for his wrestling win.
Yeah.
Toby is stung that his strengths are just not cool.
Sean basically gets a standing ovation for 3 minutes.
That's what it feels like. Even Quan, she's like, very good, Toby. Yes, Sean. Yes. And she flips a desk and smashes on the wall. Yeah.
It was a little extreme. It was funny. He got two claps. He got literally two claps.
He did. Now we are in Ms. Hatzilacco's class where the topic is DNA and JT tries to draw Toby out of his funk. Toby is tired of being invisible and wants to be noticed and recognized for something, anything. He lands on trying out for the wrestling team because everybody notices jocks.
Yeah, I mean, and everybody he tells this to thinks it's the worst idea he's ever had.
Of course.
My question here is like, what's Jake's preparation for this episode as Toby? Like, does Jake get in shape? I really wish we had him here. Does he get in shape for this episode? Does he like start hitting the gym to mirror Toby's journey?
I want to say yes, but really,
Did you catch him doing push-ups in a dressing room or something?
Probably some of that whenever he knew he had to be in the wrestling, what, leotard, onesie, whatever you would call it. If you're not in shape and you have like a week and a half to get in shape, there's not much that you can do. It's either you're always ready or you're just not ready.
You get the script and you go, oh my God.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is exactly what I did for that darn vineyard scene that I'll rue the day we shot that and they cut it. But that's exactly what I did. I think I went to the gym like 3 times a day.
But I mean, he looked good. He didn't look out of great. Shape. He just didn't look like particularly muscular and able to really mess somebody up with no training.
I thought
training.
I could take Danny.
Yeah. Take Danny. Okay.
Maybe not Danny.
We should have Danny back to discuss that.
Yeah.
We'll see what his position was. All right. Outside Degrassi, Spinner marvels at Terry's phone for having wireless web access, email, and GPS.
Oh, we're all marveling at this phone at this point. Just the thickness of it.
And the weight of a brick. Paige and Hazel walk up and question where Terry suddenly found the funds for all of these new toys and things that she is sporting. But not satisfied with Terry's brush off of an explanation, after Terry and Spinner walk away, Paige lands on, it must be shoplifting.
Did you think that this episode was going to go in that direction and that she was going to be a shoplifter? I mean, okay.
Well, no, there, not from Terry. Personally, I thought,
oh no, is this like a shoplifting episode? Because I know we love to do that under Grassy.
I mean, it easily could have been, but at least for me, there was no part of me that thought, oh, yeah, yeah. Sticky fingers. I love how...
Should I clarify it?
Exactly.
She has to spell it out.
Was it Hazel who's... Or was it Paige?
I think it was sticky Paige. Fingers. She goes, sticky fingers.
Which Hazel's means like more like shoplifting.
Shoplifting. Yeah. I thought that was maybe an ad that they did on set. Because, you know, some they kind of all looked around and got and wondered, are people going to understand what we're meaning here? We've got to make it clearer. I felt like that could have been an ad line.
Have to really beat them over the head with this because no one's picking up on the
they
subtleties.
Do that sometimes, folks. They're writing lines on set. And if something comes up, there will be a tittering from TV Village where all the, you know, director and producers, script people and writers will sit. And they'll punch up a line or they'll change a line or add a line because they're not confident there's enough clarity. So
enough clarity, which means that they're scared that you people out there wouldn't have understood. How do you feel about that? Do you feel offended?
Yeah. Yeah. You should.
You should.
I did.
That's their level of confidence in you, the audience. Write angry letters, but not to us.
it's not our fault.
Now we are in the calf, and JT tries to talk to Toby and talk him out of this new goal of his to join the wrestling team. But Toby stays firm, thinking that it will force him into being fit, and everybody will stop laughing at him.
My favorite line in the scene is, no, bad Toby.
But yes, Ashley enters, and even she gets a laugh in at the idea of Toby, you know, having a very important wrestling practice after school, strengthening his resolve. Yeah, I mean, I can understand it. It's not right. The athletically gifted are the ones that are most glorified for that feat. Mm. It's just the way that it goes, and they become instantly cool, even if they don't have the personalities to back it up at all. It's just the position that they find themselves in.
I went to an arts high school, so it was totally different.
Yeah.
People who did sports were like, they were, yeah, it was not the, they like hid.
Those were the nerds?
I was always shocked to find out if somebody played a sport in my school.
Like, really? You play soccer? We have a soccer team? Get out of here.
Yes.
Get this loser out of here.
That would actually be a funny show, like a sports team from an arts high school and just like tracking their, you know, their city champion, you know, their climb through the ranks.
And they're the ones that get picked on in the cafeteria and everything. The chess club and computer club. Yeah, people are like spilling Normie. Their drinks on their heads. That's not a bad idea at all, actually. Now, Terry Page and Hazel sit in the foyer, and Page and Hazel sneak jokes once again about Terry's supposed crime spree when Spinner runs in excitedly, asking why Terry had been hiding something from all of them. He then urges them all to follow him outside to the bus stop with a billboard of Terry being featured as a plus-size model for a brand for bigger girls. The gang is super excited for her, but Terry is embarrassed by being associated with a plus-size makeup brand. And then a passing student, to make it worse, makes fat jokes at her. And even though everyone else in the gang jumps to her defense, Terry can't hide the pain on her face.
Not Ally McAdam. Brutally dissing Ally McAdam. Yep. Terry. Sorry, it's just funny when you see your friends pop up and say horribly mean things to other characters. I was like, hey, there's Ally. And then as soon as he said his dumb joke, I was like, oof.
We saw Ally before, right? He was doing the announcement.
He did. Yeah.
Am I crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went to grade school with Ally. That's how I know him. He was so funny. He was like such
an animator. No, I love that guy. Every time he was on set, it was great.
He's such a jerk, and he's so good at playing a jerk, but he's not like this. He's such a funny, cool, loose dude to hang out with. You shoot the S. Can I spell it out? I don't know.
No, we have to bleep that. Now. All right, next scene. Now we are at the wrestling tryouts with Coach Armstrong, and Toby takes in the reality that his new endeavor is drawing him into from the sidelines. He watches as a very muscular Sean submits another unfortunate Degrassi opponent. And since only one student will make the team per weight class, everybody has to weigh in. Toby thinks he'll be up against the smaller students, but finds himself in the same weight class as Sean, which,
yeah,
no. But regardless, it's hilarious just to think of Danny and Jake in the same weight class. Either way, oh no, this is not going to go well. So Toby has to square off against Sean, and it goes exactly like we expected it.
I loved his half-hearted little feint that he does. He's like, he tries to do a move, like a psych out.
He also has no training here at all. Wouldn't, like, unless you're a savant, wouldn't you have had to?
Welcome to wrestling class. Get in there.
It's like Fight Club.
Do you know how to do this?
No. Yeah, you'll learn.
You'll figure it out.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Yeah, I guess shouldn't some people who are really proficient in wrestling be a little offended that here this kid thinks he could just, you know, jump right in? No technique. Anyway, now we are in Simpson's class, and JT shows a very sore Toby rubbing his shoulder, a wrestling website that he found with pro tips, and they settle on the section for making weight. Simpson comes by, congratulates Toby on placing third in the computer programming contest, and then clocks the website. But he doesn't know that making weight is being considered by Toby in any way, so Simpson just shares general knowledge of what he knows about the dangers of making weight as a fun fact. But now he actually put it on Toby's radar.
Yes, a fun fact, which is really a setup from the writers.
What did he, Simpson's line? He was like, we don't make weight, we make programs.
Yeah. A real groaner, which furthers Toby's desire to be a wrestler instead.
And everyone get excited, because in the next few weeks, Stefan Brogren will be joining us over here to do one of these fun little D-Grads episodes. We have a lot of cool surprises for you in the coming weeks.
Yes, we do.
Definitely pays for you to stay tuned. Now, cue the Rocky-style Toby training montage.
Same thing written down.
Did you?
Yeah. It was great. And also, it was like just borderline a different show. Like they kind of stretched Degrassi's tone, I think, to the extreme here. But it was
fun. They were having fun with it. I loved it too. And I loved how JT was just there eating donuts and doing pretty much the opposite while trying to keep Toby locked in and encouraged. Anyway, Toby is running. He's throwing medicine balls around. He's doing abs. He's doing stairs. But after 3 days, he has only lost 1 pound. One can relate, Toby. One can relate. Before more training, the boys need to take a quick break to recharge, and they go to the convenience store to grab a drink. And somehow, JT notices the chocolate bar-style laxatives and makes a joke about them. What is it? So tasty going down and so terrible coming out? Something like that. But this, again, gives Toby an idea, and you don't see him actually pick up the laxatives, but that night, Toby is standing shirtless in his bathroom
mirror.
Mm-hmm. Takes that laxative, and I guess he's hoping that this will help him shed some extra weight. Next day, it's a quick cut that Toby's standing there with an upset stomach. He's in the gym watching wrestling bouts from the sidelines again, and then he gets called to weigh in. He has lost almost 2 kilograms, which to our American friends is about 4.4 pounds. I'm telling
you. 2 kilograms. 4.4, you got it. You doing that math in your head?
Yes, sir.
Jeez, pilots.
So Toby has lost about 4.5 pounds, which concerns Armstrong right away. And he's quick to tell Toby that anybody caught making weight will be cut from the team immediately. But Toby chalks it up to hard training, and that seems to do the job for Armstrong.
So this was like a learning moment for me. This was genuinely something I had no idea existed. I didn't know that making weight was like a concern. Dude. I didn't know that kids were, you know, ending up getting messed up, trying to hit certain weights. This is something just like I had a blind spot for. So this, the awareness.
And they still do it. They still do it in boxing, on the professional side, boxing and UFC, where you get yourself down to get just into that weight class. Obviously, you want to be at the top of your weight class.
Yeah.
But then after the weigh-in, which happens, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't follow too closely, but I believe it happens about 24 hours before the match. And in that time, you could put all that weight back on. You could hydrate. You can eat as much as you want for energy. Shoot. It's just when you hit the scale that you have to be in that weight class. And then And people get into trouble a lot in terms of like health effects and ending up in the hospital and even rebounding that kind of weight so quickly when you're so depleted as it's dangerous as well.
It's probably not at all good for your health, which would have a net negative on the actual fight outcome.
Just like Christian Bale dropping weight and gaining weight, Batman and then doing The Machinist and then doing Batman again and then 310 to Yuma and back. It's incredible dedication, but it can't be great.
Can't be good for you. Don't do that unless you're Christian Bale. He's obviously a professional. No. So if you're listening, please.
Listen, he's won an Oscar. He knows what he's doing.
Take care of yourself, man.
So, in dropping weight classes, he is paired with Andrews, the one he was hoping to be paired with originally, and the two go to battle. Toby is triumphant in the match, and he is now on the wrestling team. It's not great. Not great, Toby. You're acting like a child, Toby.
I like how as he kind of gets further and further in, he gets more irritable.
Oh, yeah.
It almost starts to imitate like like a steroid storyline kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like he kind of loses his mind a little bit.
Or drug withdrawals.
Yeah. Drug withdrawal. Yeah.
He's, but he's depleted, right? He's hangry the entire episode.
He's so hangry.
Yeah. Everyone can see what's going on with him and he has no patience for anything. So that's why he's snapping. But now it's a new day. A jovial Toby whistles his way through his kitchen, sparking a reaction from Ashley. Nerd Toby is no more. Jock Toby has arrived. Ashley shakes it off and tells Toby that there are two chocolate muffins waiting for him in the cabinet. But Toby tells her that he is not hungry. Ashley is very concerned by this because now this will be 3 days in a row that he is skipping breakfast. But Toby deflects and quickly exits. Now at school, Toby receives his wrestling windbreaker, and his first order of business is to make a pompous ass of himself to Nadia and Kendra. Mm-hmm. He scares them off just as JT walks up and pokes fun at Toby's newly inflated ego, but Toby lashes back and smacks JT with a dig about him being a mascot and not on any team. And JT is caught off guard and hurt by this sudden venom that Toby is spewing. And it went from a joke and something light, or like, even if there was a lot of truth to it, it was still sort of in good fun. And Toby just goes after him.
This also kind of reminded me of Teen Wolf. As soon as he gets that sport jacket, it's giving Teen Wolf.
I've never actually seen Teen Wolf.
Oh, it's such a good movie. But he gets, do you know the storyline?
No.
Spoiler alert. The movie's 30 years old. Like, it can't do that. But he's a werewolf.
That's what I meant.
He's a werewolf.
Yeah.
He's a werewolf. And because he's a werewolf, he suddenly becomes, he's the sort of like scrawny kid that nobody pays attention to. He becomes like the star basketball player of his team and it goes to his head, right?
Huh.
It's a be careful what you wish for story.
Now we're with Spinner, Hazel, and Paige as they gawk over Terry's new ad campaign photos. But when Terry tells them that she's canceling her next shoot, Paige digs a little bit, and Terry eventually admits that she's not interested in continuing these campaigns because of the backlash that she's getting for being plus size and all the trolling that she's receiving at school. Paige wants to say more, but is quickly halted by Simpson as class is about to begin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel obviously so. My heart goes out to Terry.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody around her is being so supportive. It doesn't even matter. You can hear that stuff, but if you don't really believe it.
If you don't believe it yourself, exactly.
Yourself, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it doesn't amount to anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, for every, 20, 30 compliments, you get one negative comment, and that's what you gravitate towards. That's what you latch onto, and that's what really.
Oh, yeah. Social media. Mm-hmm. It's a real fun time.
I cannot even imagine what it would be like to navigate being made fun of by your entire school in real time.
Yeah.
As people have to deal with today.
It's it boggles the mind. I don't know how kids do it. They're really up against it.
As a parent, I mean, as we just said, no matter what you say, if the child or whoever the subject doesn't believe it themselves, then everything that you're saying is falling on deaf ears.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine what parenting must be like when you know your children are going through this. It's powerless. Anyway. Yeah,
truly, truly.
Now, Toby, looking very low on energy and spaced out, is confronted by Ashley in the cafeteria line. By the way, why is he standing in the cafeteria line if he's not getting food?
Yeah. He's like pretending?
He's trying to blend in. Maybe. But now Ashley is concerned that Toby isn't eating lunch either. So when Ashley says that she's going to get their parents involved, Toby immediately orders a very hearty burger, which looks like almost like a mushroom stroganoff on top of it. So, yeah. And fries to satisfy his sister. He takes a few bites in front of her and then also sees Armstrong is looking over with a critical eye. He's on people's radar.
Yeah, no, it's true. This, these shots of Toby when we're really in his perspective, really
right
up close,
almost fisheye. Yeah,
almost fisheye. The camera is so wide, gives us that. One, we're very much in his mind and his perspective, almost singularly in his mind. He's so stretched out across the. It also warps you.
Yes,
right. Like it physically warps you. It looks like a trick lens, so it kind of mirrors him feeling faint and not having any energy and being in this weird wacky world. I loved that choice. Great job, Paul Fox.
And it also almost like the audio feels louder as well. Everything is coming at you in an imperfect way. And it was very well done. There's another, well, there are a few more scenes where we get to see that, but like when Toby was in media immersion, really feeling crappy, and Simpson comes in and leans in and he's like fills the whole frame with his face.
Yeah. People are very, everything's imposing. It's a little unsettling. That's right. You don't see something peripherally until it's right there. And then right suddenly it's massive. It's cool effect.
So after Toby takes a few bites of that burger and takes in these people watching him, it leads us to Toby in the bathroom. Mirror in the bathroom once again, staring at himself before making a decision that I think many of us are clued into, turning and disappearing into a stall. Now, just as that stall door closes, JT enters, stands in the mirror, fixes his hair just in time to hear the sounds of somebody throwing up. And thinking that it might be Toby, JT checks on him, finds out it is, in fact, Toby, but he gets an excuse of the lunch just not sitting right and needing some privacy. And that seems to do the trick for the moment. JT leaves Toby to it.
It was Sheila's sauce.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
It escalated pretty quickly. To full on, like, okay,
bulimia.
Laxative, yeah, to full on bulimia. Laxatives, that's sure, that's one thing. It's a, but we, and what it made me, it made Toby seem way more determined than I've ever seen him on the show. I have not seen the side of him where he kind of is obsessively determined to achieve something.
And very impulsive as well.
Yeah, and impulsive. Well, to the exclusion of everything else, he just fixates on it. And he, so this is really extreme behavior very quickly for his character.
I guess he's been sitting with this idea of being invisible and inadequate for so long, no matter how he excels in the things that he's already good at and the recognition he gets from the people that I guess he doesn't really value their friendship or opinion as much as he would the, you know, general acceptance from other people in the school. Maybe he's just been waiting for his opportunity to latch on to something like this. I don't know, but you are right. It does happen very quickly. It would have been, I think, maybe done a little bit more tastefully if this was maybe not an A plot that was stretched over two episodes, but we got to see an evolution of this where it didn't seem so rushed.
I agree. It could have been a two episode arc for him. I also really like the, that the show is doing the myth busting of eating disorder, gender stereotypes
with men.
Yeah.
With boys. Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And then they address that specifically in the next scene, actually, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So JT is now at his locker when Ashley approaches and shares her concerns over Toby. JT has noticed Toby was acting strange, but has been chalking it up to his training. Ashley is concerned that Toby is developing an eating disorder, which JT quickly dismisses as only a problem for girls. But Ashley corrects him that it applies to boys as well, and to keep an eye out for anything that might be an indicator. Now, what was also really heartbreaking about this, and they address in the final scene, but he's trying so hard to be loved by people that he doesn't see all the people who are concerned for his well-being.
Yeah.
Who do love him. Yeah. He's looking everywhere else except where he should be looking, really.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a hard place to be in, because I don't really know what the solution there is for Toby. I see how he feels invisible in some ways in school.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or that he's reduced to this idea of like just he's kind of the nerd,
the best friend, the boy next door kind of thing.
Yeah.
He'll never be be Craig. He'll never be Sean.
For sure. So I get that too. But he doesn't realize how many people actually care. Mm-hmm. And Ashley being concerned for him is a really good indicator, because at the beginning of the show, they were fighting like cats and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And she's actually like, she loves him like a brother by this mm-hmm. point. Like, she's very concerned for him. And so is Sean. Like, and Sean's also always kind of been concerned for him as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, like, the whole ecstasy thing when he, like, switched the pill on JT and Toby? So, yeah, Sean's always also kind of kept an eye on Toby, in a sense.
I think Sean is an example of someone that is trying to be as polar opposite to their parents.
Yeah.
As he could be. Where it's many people fall into the trap and find themselves to go down the exact same road.
Mm-hmm.
Sean has taken that parental role more than a couple times now with the younger students. So it doesn't surprise me. He didn't know too much about this, but he could tell something was off. Anyone could. You see, like, Toby is just, it's like he's been knocked out in Mortal Kombat and just awaiting that fatality. Okay, next scene. Toby, dreary and unfocused, tries to pay attention in Simpson's class as his vision blurs. JT and Simpson both show concern at Toby's state of disarray, but Toby is determined to soldier on. Now, back with the B plot, which has been forever. Terry sits at the bus stop with her billboard and puts a call into her agent to cancel another shoot. Spinner overhears this, though, and takes his shot at helping her. Terry's adamant about not wanting to be the face of a plus-size campaign, but Spinner reinforces that even though she's not a twig, she's still very beautiful, and she should not ever lose sight of that. And this seems to touch Terry, if even only for a moment.
It touched me. Like I said, I got choked up. When you say, like, and anybody who tells you different is blind, I was like,
And just told them to shut up.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're in the locker room. Toby tries to pull himself together right before his match. But when JT enters and tells him that he knows he's been throwing up on purpose and that he and Ashley are very worried, it ends with JT begging Toby to just stop wrestling. I thought that was a really nice moment too,
because
JT was, it wasn't, he was like, wrestling is destroying you, man.
And yeah,
like, just stop. What are you doing here? Just stop. You don't need to be doing this at all.
Yeah. And Toby in full just lost his grip entirely when he says, there's a gym full of people out there waiting for me.
His sights are set on the match. A whole audience will be there cheering him on, and they all expect him to win. He's gonna win for them. And then Armstrong appears to call Toby in for weigh-ins. Toby sits on the bench as people wrestle in front of him. Toby is tired and hungry, and unfocused, and his vision keeps blurring in and out. JT and Ashley watch from the stands, concern all over their face. But then Toby's called for his match, and it starts. And he's taken down pretty quickly, but he evades getting pinned, pops back up to his feet, and resets. But before clinching again, Toby faints, and this stops the match. Armstrong, Ashley, and JT run to his side, but Toby is out. Like that kind of cockeyed, diagonal, keel over.
Hit the ground, that was, yeah.
It got me feeling a certain way. Now we are with Terry, Paige, and Hazel, and they're walking through the neighborhood after school. Terry shows the girls the proofs of her most recent photo shoot. Doesn't she ever go to school? Like, when's this?
She's too busy being an international model.
And everyone is full of glee. I guess the words from Spinner really did get through. So Terry did not cancel that last shoot and went through with it. But passing Mohammed, who is selling ice cream, he takes a couple more digs at Terry, like she should join the sumo team. Does Grassy even have a sumo team?
That's like, I couldn't believe that. I was shocked. It's just such a messed up joke.
Yeah. And what he called her Beluga first. No, yeah. That was, I think that was the scene before, but either way, he said that to her. No, he said it's the more everything girl or whatever. Yeah.
He's at his job. He has a job serving people.
He's representing Popsicle and Nestle right now. The girls turn and walk away, Terry appearing to just want to let this insult roll off of her back. But then, in a very not Terry-like move, turns and unloads on this mean boy, telling him that most girls in the world look like this, so he better get used to it, and then finishes by rubbing her modeling payout in his measly ice cream boy salary's face. Much to the other girl's enjoyment.
Yeah.
What
do you make, ice cream boy?
Yeah.
Which was great. Yeah. But then it got me thinking about all the ice cream boys that might be offended.
I know.
Me too.
Me too.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
I was like, I don't know if we can be using ice cream boy as a pejorative in 2026. Right?
That's right.
But what a way to stand up for herself. I really loved seeing this from Terry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And especially after season one, she was MVP friend and she was always playing second fiddle and her having her feelings stepped on, trying to help everybody. And now she's finally realizing who she is as a person and what she values and that she's strong. Stronger than
and
she
she's drawing strength from her friends as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
She has a good support network around her and she's earned it. But it also begs the question, why was Paige so quick to assume that it was for something, you know, nefarious that she was getting up to?
I had the same question.
Like, aren't you friends?
Yeah. Friends? Does Paige have a secret bias that she thinks Terry is like up to no good secretly? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I found that a little shocking. But I mean, all's well that ends well with the B plot. Now we're in the final scene. Toby sits in his kitchen looking much healthier and JT enters and checks on him. Toby lets JT know that he got cut from the team and Ashley told their parents about what he did. And Toby assumes that he is now the laughingstock at school. But JT quickly dispels him of this, saying everyone was genuinely concerned for his well-being and passed on well wishes. And on Toby's face, After JT asks him the loaded question, do you still think that you're invisible? We freeze. Yeah.
What do you think he thinks?
It's hard to say because so much happened in that A plot. It was such a journey to be condensed into a 22-minute episode. So
truly.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he didn't. I want to say that he should realize that, but with the way that he was feeling at the beginning of the episode and throughout the episode, I still don't think that that would be enough for him. He just failed at the new thing that he was trying to achieve, but he's still in the exact same position.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see going forward how Toby relates to fellow students now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expecting it to be dropped a little bit because that's what we do. Shout part two just happened, and Paige in this episode is up top right at the beginning, being sort of boisterous,
larger in life, happy go lucky,
normal,
back to normal Paige.
Yeah, Paige. Mm-hmm. So maybe some time has passed, but I understand why fans of the show go, wait, this crazy thing happens, and then it gets just kind of dropped in the next episode, but it is serialized. Or it's not really serialized in that
not
sense.
Yet.
Yeah. So it's kind of like one-offs here and there and little arcs. But
I saw this this documentary on Breaking Bad getting made, and the fact that it was serialized TV, even though they were shorter seasons, that was one of the things that almost did them in. No one wanted a show that if you came in on episode 6 of season 2, it might be enjoyable for you, but you're completely lost with the story.
Yeah.
And Breaking Bad was actually not doing well in ratings at all until Netflix really came on the scene and the first 4 seasons were available. So everybody watched it from the beginning and were ready for the broadcast release of season 5. So serialized comes with its problems, right?
Sure. Yeah, makes sense.
It's also just it's a problem of having a cast that's so large because there's one pie and everyone has to share it.
Yeah.
And you, it would almost be better. Like, we haven't seen Jake in episodes now. Right?
No, not for a long time.
Exactly.
He had his big episode. He hasn't even kind of come in and out.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it might even make more sense if, like, you have a character that the focus of a storyline, a heavy storyline, and then they disappear for a couple episodes. So you don't just see a couple scenes with them acting normal in between.
Yeah.
Making people think that they're completely over this. I don't know. Yeah.
It's so hard to track all that, though, folks. It's like for the writers to be able to have the freedom to do what they do best, which is come up with these storylines, issue-based storylines, and make sure that this gigantic checkerboard of what cast member is where and their personal stories versus like another B plot story and then factoring that out. It's a lot of work. I'm actually surprised they handled it as well as they did.
I don't know how those people slept at all. I love going into that writing room, though. The whiteboard.
Did they hide all the documents? Did they throw themselves over top of the papers? Get out of here.
No,
get out of
really,
here, kid.
It really smelled strongly of pot in there. No, I'm kidding.
All right. Well, that was a fun episode.
It really was.
We love hearing from you guys and gals. We encourage you to send your email questions, feedback, whatever to dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We've also got a Discord group, Dgrads Alumni, and we are on Patreon where you get to see these episodes, video versions of our podcast early. And we also do some bonus content there for you. We've got some questions here from our email that I wanted to share. This one's more of it's a comment question. This is funny. This is just for giggles. Hi, guys. This is from Shelly.
Shelly,
guys.
Hey.
Love the podcast. So fun hearing from the Degrassi bad boys. There you go. In 2006 to 2007, there was a contest to win Aubrey as a prom date in the U.S. As an emo 16-year-old, I thought this would be my only opportunity to tell someone to set me up with Jake Epstein. I love that they wanted to go on a date with Aubrey to tell them to set them up on a date with Jake Epstein. It seems like it's like a long shot on a long shot.
You know what's funny about that?
What?
I went, Aubrey and I went as prom dates.
Did you really?
Yes.
Okay, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to get to that in 1 second because I need to hear more. They say, Shelley says, who I couldn't have had a bigger crush on. Yes, Jake Epstein. Me too. Yes, I thought Drake would be my matchmaker and that this was normal. Naturally, I lost, but my question, is there someone in the U.S. that won a contest taking Drake to prom? Did you ever hear about this? Hilarious now.
Yeah, so it was Aubrey and I were selected. I thought that I was the one that they picked personally, or that they got to pick too, because it was the winner and her friend got to have two Degrassi guys, or I guess if it was a guy that won, two Degrassi girls. And show up at their prom. And Aubrey and I went to Poughkeepsie, New York.
This is incredible.
Yeah, it's, I haven't thought about that for a while. And what a weird life I've lived.
Totally weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shane, can you imagine just getting like Ian Christensen just calls you and he's like, we're gonna need you to go to a prom in Poughkeepsie this weekend.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. If somebody won you for a prom, we're putting you on a plane.
Pretty much like that.
And did you bring a corsage? Like, did you do all the right things?
I think we were provided with corsages. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. This is so
I remember correctly, we went out to dinner first and there was a camera team. So we flew into New York. We drove out to Poughkeepsie. We were there for the night and then we drove back to New York and flew out the next day.
Oh my God. Okay. So there was camera evidence of this is what I'm
Yes.
Hearing.
It's somewhere. Yeah, for sure. I think it had to have been through Noggin. 100% it was through Noggin. Yeah.
Oh, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Thank you for that, Shelley. We're really unearthing some maybe slightly uncomfortable and embarrassing memories here.
But yes, I mean, like, sure, for my own ego, I'm sure it was great for people at the time. But someone out there gets to say that their actual high school date was Drake. Their prom date was Drake.
Who are you? Write in. Yeah. I want to know who you are. And Shelley, sorry that you didn't make the contest. But we will pass your message on to Jake Epstein. He's married now. But we'll let him know. Okay. This is from Mo, and Mo says, hey, Mike and Shane, my name's Mo. I was 13 when Degrassi, The Next Generation first aired and was hooked from the get-go. I grew up about an hour outside of Toronto. Hey, as a kid, I thought it was so cool to physically be near my friends on Degrassi. Many, many times we felt you. Both the show's content and my physical proximity made me feel less alone. I remember the general public's excitement leading up to the pilot episode, especially after they re-aired Schools Out. And after Jonavision had the episode with some of the original cast.
I think all of the original cast.
I love Jonavision. It was such a special time. I was stoked when I found the D-Grads podcast. Mike, you mentioned you were goth in high school. I was too. Did it excite your little gothy heart when you heard there would be a goth character? Did young Mike relate to Ellie at all? I certainly did.
But you were not there yet.
I wasn't. I didn't know Ellie at this time. But any time I'm having this now with Ashley's character, and especially in this episode, because she really does become more vampire looking by the episode. And I love it. And she owns it in this episode. Like when Toby calls her a vampire, she kind of takes it as a badge of honor. She's like, yeah, I'll take that compliment.
Yeah.
So I really like that.
I'm rarely up during the day anymore.
And then Canadianism, Shane, maybe you can answer this one. Whenever a character says A, was that scripted or did it come out naturally like it does for many Canadians, myself included? How about the word mum instead of mom scripted? I also call my mom mum, and I think it's a very charming Canadianism. I didn't actually know that.
Like mum, M-U-M?
Yeah, M-U-M.
I thought that was more of a...
British, maybe?
A British thing, right? That would be mum. I don't know about the mum thing. I thought we said mum the same as Americans did, maybe with a little twang. But the A, I mean, I don't even realize that I'm doing it, so it couldn't have been scripted. I can't picture any of them actually writing out E-H question mark. Do you?
I don't think so. There's a thing in Canada, too, where I think we ride this delicate line of we want broad appeal, but we also need to unlock tax credits that only happen if we admit that the show is Canadian, right? That we don't completely hide the identity of the city that we're shooting in.
So we need a minimum amount of A's per episode.
Yeah, it's like 17 A's an episode. I don't know. To get this,
it's like Super Troopers with the 10 meows worked into this sentence. It's like,
yeah. Well, and that was the thing with Kevin Smith coming on too. Kevin was like, "All right, I want to direct it." And they were like,
"They're like, nope,
can't do that." Really,
he was okay, like, "Why? I want to write."
They're like, "Yeah, no, we can't. Needs to be a Canadian writer as well." He was like, "Well, can I be an actor in it?"
Oh yeah,
and like, yeah, we could do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have mandates up here and we've got to like cast our, because otherwise we would be complete service industry and they would send, you know, like the director, the cinematographer, the entire creative crew would be potentially not Canadian. And all they would use Canada for would be to get like cheap tax credits to be able to shoot here cheaper. That's why they shoot here, because mm-hmm. we can offer really good competitive tax incentives for production, so it's cheaper. So that's what helps us attract it. And we like to develop our own creative talent, so we've got those mandate.
Yeah, but at the end of it, yeah, we were probably inserting a left, right, and center without even noticing.
And a few of boots in there. A-B-O-O-T. Well, that's about it for the time we have today. Thanks, Mo, for those questions. We'll get to more of your questions next time, and we've had a blast doing this with y'all.
We always have a blast. And Mike, I just want to show you again. Look at this thing, dude, coming in.
Buddy, it's
getting darker and darker by the day. I'm not contractually obligated to say this, but shout out to Now Hair Time. They did such good work. If anybody is curious about getting a hair transplant and you're thinking about doing it abroad, email us. I could give you all the details to the place that I went, because I'm so happy with it. And it's still like
the
half
proof is in the
to
pudding,
a third of the time that it's supposed to take for the full effect to show itself. So I'm blown away. But that's just for me, not to hijack this. We always have a great time here. I'm happy to be back to good health and take some of the burden off of our host extraordinaire over there. And like I said, we have some really cool guests lined up for you over the next few weeks. So stay tuned.
That's right. Wherever you get your podcasts, review, comment, like, heart this podcast. It really helps us, helps the algorithm see us and boost the signal, because there are Degrassi fans out there who don't know we exist. I'm hearing from them every day. I had no idea this thing existed until mm-hmm. today. So that would be a huge help for us.
This has been a review of episode 209, Mirror in the Bathroom. And we were your hosts, Shane Kipple and Mike LaBelle. And we will see you next week, people.
Take care of yourselves.
Sayonara.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.